inspired by poetry.
Let's give it some lip.
Ta-da.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to another Life Inspired by Poetry podcast. I'm Jenna, and I'm here with TB. How you doing?
I am doing well. So we've been away for a while. You would not have missed it because the poems are scheduled, but I am in need of some oxygen.
So yes.
That's what it's going to be about.
Yes, I know. The end of year can really get chaotic, and so it's nice to take a break. And just to be able to absorb and digest some poems.
Yeah.
And sometimes those poems don't have to be very long.
No. And I just think we want to re-energize people. Like, I don't know, it's like fuel for me. So we want to re-energize people. And probably, you know, talk about the context in which a lot of these poems take place. It might be not so dissimilar to the experiences we're having today.
That's right. The human experience is quite consistent.
Correct. And you'll find that it just seems to be the same one over and over again.
Yep, with just different circumstances around.
Yeah. So give us a little bit of perspective. So these short ones, I think, are aimed at perspectives and sort of shape our worldview, or at least put it out in the open.
Yeah, and get us to stop and consider.
Exactly.
I love that.
Exactly.
That's what I love about poetry sometimes. Sometimes it can just be beautiful and take you on this beautiful journey.
Yeah.
But other times it can just kind of be like a little punch in the gut and you're like, that one hit home.
It does. And I think that especially as we look at some of the poets that we're looking at, the test of time for me.
Yes.
It's how long they've been around and how relevant they are. In spite of the journey that we've been on, we seem to have been stuck in the same place.
Yeah.
So,
well, let's get into it.
Feed the soul.
Let's do it. Well, we're going to start with one by Robert Frost. Now, I think in another podcast, we did look at another Robert Frost poem, The Road Not Taken.
The Road Not Taken, one of my favorites.
That's right. And this is one of his shorter ones, and it's it kind of goes like this. Some say the world will end in fire. Some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. But if I had to perish twice, I think I know enough of hate to say that for destruction, ice is also great and would suffice.
Wow. Kind of like The Road Not Taken.
Right? Yes.
Wow. So the first thing I'll say, isn't it funny, a guy called Robert Frost talks about fire and ice.
There you go.
So that's my first observation.
Yep.
You know, what a play on words.
Mm.
Not intentionally, because he didn't like create his last name, but the fact that, you know, when I saw that at first, I thought, wow, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I get it.
And I love how he is using this kind of binary between fire and ice to also look at that split between desire and hate, and how those two things have a certain impact on a person's life.
Yeah.
You know, desire can be any kind of passion. It really does fire you up.
Yeah.
We say that, don't we?
Yeah.
We say, oh man, they were really fired up when they talked about this. And ice, you know,
cools you down.
And hate is that thing that just kind of freezes you.
Yeah.
And until you get past that, you can't find that fire again.
Yeah. And I'm gonna throw you in a different direction when I read this. So I'm a political scientist. So for me, I saw the political discourse in front of me.
Of course.
Right? Mm. How we're energized by one thing in the flames and we're so dug into that, right? And the other is, as you say, very binary. Mm. It's a zero-sum kind of equation. But in the end, pragmatism rules, right? So I don't know if that's what he intended, but when I looked at that, I thought, wow, does that not reflect our political discourse at the moment, where we are so binary in our choices that, and probably coming back to, well, let's be pragmatic about it, either one will work.
That's very interesting. I like that idea. And actually, if you see it that way, you can almost go, people who hold so fast to a certain conviction, right?
Yeah.
They're fired up about one conviction.
Yeah.
Hate people that don't have that same conviction.
Yeah.
Mm.
But yet.
But both are destructive.
But yet. But yet. You know, I keep coming back to it, but yet. Either one of those things could be right. And it comes back to like a conversation I'm having with a colleague of mine at the moment. Two things can be true at the same time, right? Two truths can live at the same time.
Yeah.
So I saw in that a validation of two truths can be, because either one will be, they can both work,
yeah.
you know, but it's that for me to be right and for me to be passionate and my desire is to hold true, then yours must be destructive. Like, right.
So, yeah. So the other side looks at the other side and says,
and we're both doing the same thing.
You're going to destroy the world.
Yeah. We're both doing the same thing. We're both doing the same thing. And we need to come back to the middle and go, well, maybe either of these things could work.
Mm.
Maybe not in its original version, but we've got to just think about it different. What's a complementary thing here?
Yeah, interesting. So. Now, a little bit more about Robert Frost, an American poet, born in San Francisco. He's a California boy.
And he's liberal. I understand it.
Yes. He was born in 1874 and lived to 1963. Can you imagine the changes that he saw in his life?
Absolutely.
That's phenomenal.
That's a lot of changes. He's been through two wars, right?
Yep.
Think of all the things, the Depression.
That's right.
Think of all the things that he would have experienced in his life.
Oh, and all of the civil rights.
All of that.
Everything.
Like, all of that.
It's amazing. His poetry usually is about the rural life, kind of the everyday interactions. And he tries to keep it real. And I think that when you talked about that idea, realistic pragmatism.
Yeah, pragmatism.
He kind of mentions the idealism, but then always brings it back to, well, you know, reality is.
Yeah. And if you draw back, like, on, you know, the road not taken.
That was it.
Right?
It's reality.
You can see that flavor in the way that he views the world, that maybe it's not in those absolutes.
That's right. Yeah. And With Road Not Taken, same with this one, it's the choice that you make.
You make.
Yeah. That makes the difference.
That makes a difference.
It's not the road.
It's not the road. It's absolutely not the road.
It's the fact that you made a choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I found, like, the title Fire and Ice and why he used that, right, two powerful forces everyone can identify with.
That's right.
Everyone can identify with.
And that's what his poetry was inclusive.
Like,
you know, it was for everyone. Yeah.
If I were a climate change activist, I would use.
Oh, yeah.
You know, do you want to be in flames
global
or
warming,
do you want to?
Ice
yeah,
age.
Exactly. You know, which of these choices? So when I looked at that in terms of the discourse in our society, I just thought, why are people not like referring to Frost more often?
Mm.
Why isn't this part of the campaign to give us sort of the wisdom that we need in how we look at these issues and test of time, right? He's lived through some of these things. He's lived through some of the most disastrous things that have happened in our societies.
Oh.
And yet he has found this middle ground to, you know, what choice are you going to make?
That's right,
You know, very tempered.
Yeah, some of those greatest, not greatest in a good way, but the greatest moments of man's inhumanity to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the poem itself, I love the simplicity of the language as well, and the fact that there's only three rhymes.
Yeah.
You have the ire and fire, desire and fire. You have the ice and twice. And then you have
suffice.
Hate and great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's able to do that. So simple, the rhythm and rhyme is just great. It's easy to get into.
Conversational.
I just feel it. Like his writing is like music to me. It's almost lyrical, right?
It is,
it's
but like, it is at the same time, it's almost like he's just pondering something. You know, some say the world will end in fire. Some say ice.
And from maybe what that's the way it's intended to be read.
That's right.
You know?
From what I've tasted.
My favorite line is, but if it had to, if perish twice.
Mm.
So even with the enormity of that could be so, you know, that's a really big statement, right?
It is.
To perish, not
twice.
Once, but twice.
Yeah.
And yet, I think I know enough of hate, right?
Mm.
So I think I know what that could lead to say that for destruction eyes is also great.
Yeah.
You know? So it's this way of bringing us back to some sort of normalcy, of going, no matter how extreme you might take it, come back to the basic, either one will be okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you go too far to the extreme on
either
side
you're going to end up in the same place.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah,
oh, so that's good. See, this. Small little tidbit of a piece that has so much relevance and such so much thought-provoking articulation of ideas that it's just, they're great. I love these small poems.
Yeah. And I think that what's wonderful about this, and one of our desires to bring this more to the public, is that you don't have to have the most complex pieces. The best poets for me are the ones who can make big statements in very few words. Yeah.
That's right.
In very few words. It's an art form that is so hard to take profound stuff and simplify it in a way that anyone can get it.
That's right. Find that perfect analogy or metaphor
that works for people.
That also opens up all these different ideas. So fire and ice as metaphors.
Yeah.
And we've gone into all different directions of what those could be standing in for. Excellent.
So I will say, DC Comic, please leave this alone, because I can see then all the movies that they're making this could be relevant to. Leave it alone. I think it stays well on its own as we are now. Marvel and DC, this is not for you. This is for the public.
This is for the public. That's right. Well, let's go and let's move to Australia.
Yes.
And let's look at Michael Lunig. Normally, Lunig is known for his cartoons. He's a cartoonist.
Yeah.
Very interesting artist in a lot of ways. Artist both drawing-wise, but also an artist linguistically with his language as well. And that's what we're going to see in this one. He was born in 1945 in East Melbourne.
Okay.
And in 1999, he was awarded...
Recognized
maybe, as a living national treasure.
Wow.
Yes, by the National Trust.
Big shoes.
That's big shoes, that's right. Do you have to maintain that, or is it just a one-time thing, just that year you were, and then...
Imagine the news when you get it. Well, what are the responsibilities of the world they're placing on me here?
I know, you could go into...
Australia.
Go into a coffee shop. Oh, excuse me, I am a
national
treasure.
Does that mean I don't have to, join the queue?
That's right.
My coffee comes to me. Well deserved. So we're not arguing
about
that.
Very well deserved.
Very well deserved.
But it is an interesting title to have to shoulder.
I couldn't imagine. I'm weighted by just listening to that.
Me too.
What does that mean?
Me too. I know. Interesting. All right. Well, let's look at one of his, How to Get There. Do you want to read this one?
I will read this one.
Excellent.
So Lunig is new to me, so I'm hoping I can do justice to this. Go to the end of the path until you get to the gate. Go through the gate and head straight out toward the horizon. Keep going towards the horizon. Sit down and have a rest every now and again. But keep on going. Just keep on with it. Keep on going as far as you can. That's how you get there.
Nice.
Wow.
So this is what we would call free verse.
Free verse.
Yep. It just doesn't have any rhyme.
No structure.
That's right.
But the message.
Exactly. It's about the message.
Is powerful, right? So can I read it again?
I'd love you to. Just to get it started.
So everyone can feel what I'm feeling at the moment. So if you think of your life as all the struggles that you may be contemplating before you take action. This is the best advice. How to get there. Go to the end of the path until you get to the gate. Go through the gate and head straight out toward the horizon. Keep going toward the horizon. Sit down and have a rest every now and again. But keep on going. Just keep on with it. Keep on going as far as you can. That is how you get there.
So good. Four times to tell us to keep going.
And take a break, right?
Take a break when you need
to. That's
the line that I think I
had
the most
trouble
with.
Because it didn't say just stop when you didn't get there.
Yeah.
Just take a breath every now and again.
That's right.
And the gate is what opens everything up. So I love the gate and the horizon. The horizon is the optimal thing you're reaching toward. The gate is what you have to open for it to be possible, right?
That's right.
So I think free form, but yet very powerful. And again, can everyone relate?
Exactly. It's the analogies, the metaphor of the gate.
Absolutely.
The gate is not literal.
Yeah.
It's figurative.
Yeah.
Whatever gate that is for you, that you just keep thinking, someday I'll go through that.
Yeah.
Open that thing wide. Take that first step. yeah. and keep going.
And the horizon is the place you want to get to, right?
That's right.
We can all see it. It's out there.
Yeah.
But it's within reach.
Yeah.
But it's within reach.
It is.
Powerful. I think he should be rewarded that twice. Living National Treasure.
Yes.
And well deserved.
Very.
And I wonder to what extent, like, I don't know much of his work, but I wonder to what extent this mirrors, like, his work.
Well, maybe we'll have to do a deep
dive. I think that would be nice to go and explore to see to the extent of this. Because I take it from this, it's about the persistence that we have to do to persevere. Like, like, it's about
enduring.
What keeps you going. How would you endure? All of those things. And I could almost visualize what I think his cartoons will be like, but I need to go back and look. And he's a Melbourneite, so, you know, he's got to be a good person doing really wonderful things in a great city and being, you know, inspired by Melbourne itself. But, it's lovely. It's really lovely, and it's doing, and I think it's relatable. Like,
you might actually know some of his drawings, I would imagine. All right. Pause. I'm going to look things up.
So while she does that, I will say that I'm usually not a free verse person, but this is one of the ones that I really love. Because a lot of times for me, poetry has
What does free verse not normally
do for me? I need a rhythm and a rhyme that I sometimes don't get from that. And I am a creative, but I like structure to some degree. So, and I don't know. I can't say that I hate it. I just say it's not something I gravitate toward. So.
Some of these?
Oh,
here's some
I, do
of his
I do know.
Yes.
I do know. I do know. I do know. And if you look at his drawings, it's very much about that.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
My apologies, Lunig. I do know your work.
Yeah. Very, very
Lost
iconic.
Yes.
Very iconic.
Always people going somewhere.
Exactly. They're always on a mission. They're doing.
So what he's done is given the narrative to the art.
That's right.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Double check mark. So I grew up with poetry being lyrical to some sense. And so so that is what I'm most comfortable with. So I wouldn't go out and necessarily look for things that are not that.
Mm.
But it just shows me that I maybe need to broaden my horizons a bit because I really like this piece.
Good.
And I think that on my Christmas cards this year, I'm actually going to send that message out to everyone.
Hey, good.
I think I'm going to send that message out to everyone because I think it's really powerful.
You found your Christmas home.
Yeah, I found my Christmas
home. New Year's.
Yeah, I don't have a ride one, so I found it. So
thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Awesome. Well, let's keep going with some smaller but poignant poems. And we're going to look at this one from Anais Nin, and it's Risk. So I'll go ahead and read it, then we'll talk about what we think and feel and who she is. And then the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom.
Wow.
That's one sentence, but it's broken down into eight lines. Let me just read it one more time. And then the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. Again, that metaphor.
Wow. But also the relevance.
Mm. That's what we were saying. Like, in these small poems, they can hit on something that's so poignant to the human condition in so few words with just that right metaphor or analogy.
It's a fear that keeps us in this place.
Mm. Yeah.
The fear of unleashing this beautiful blossom because it is unknown and it's uncertain.
Yeah.
Wow.
But at some point, that fear will become too painful. And you have to. Yes, you have to.
You have to. So it's better to do it earlier, sooner rather than later, right? The sooner you get there, the less pain you have to endure.
Let's do these two together.
Yeah.
So if you do Anais Nin first to tell you there is something you need to blossom.
Absolutely.
And then take Lunig to say, open that gate. Let's do it.
Let's do it. So as thematically, wow, I didn't even say this, but it's a journey, right?
It is a journey I'm taking us on.
It's a journey that we're taking on. And probably we didn't design it that way. It just happened. And it just tells you the power of poetry, doesn't it? And for each of us, we will see it in a different way.
Oh, definitely.
We'll see it in a different way. So it's, regardless of the poet, regardless of the poem, mm-hmm. it is contextually appropriate no matter who you are and where you are.
That's right.
You can be inspired by it.
Yeah.
There's something in it to inspire all of us.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a little bit about Anais Nin. Born in France in 1903 and then immigrated to America in 1914. She was influenced by that surrealist movement.
Yep.
You know, so everything.
Too much for me most of the time.
Not quite pinpointing exactly what it is, but speaking around it. She did study psychoanalysis.
Okay.
Which I think is what we see a little bit in this poem here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can
really
see that.
Really thinking about the mental inhibitors.
Correct.
That prevent us from taking that next step.
Correct.
From coming outside of our fear.
Less Freud.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. And she's more famous for her diaries, really, and a little bit of controversy.
Yeah.
At the end of her life, a posthumous diary was released that was quite erotic in nature.
Today would be reality TV, let's face it.
Yeah, probably. And for the time, it was a little risque.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe this has a lot to do with even that writing, you know, that here she was in that erotic state and wasn't really, she's a woman in that period.
That doesn't allow
would
for
not
that.
Be allowed at all. I mean, can you imagine the conversations at the dinner table of what she was doing? And yet, at some point, she was saying, that's too painful. I can't be that's who she is, you know?
Yeah.
And today would be celebrated. High five, you know?
And that's interesting, too, that idea of the bud is something that's being constrained.
You can't see the beauty in it.
It needs to flourish.
Yeah.
And so, that's definitely... Definitely a key analysis of that, that moment as well. Could be something personal in what she was experiencing and came up with that idea to talk about it. Could be more general about fear.
Yeah.
But anything. Yeah. And that's what I love about poetry again.
Yeah, again.
You know, so we can know about the author's life and we can even know about their intention.
Yeah.
Like what they wanted to do with this poem. But ultimately, the reception does not depend on the author's intention.
At all. We will get out of it what we want to get out
exactly.
of it.
Exactly.
We will.
And it's a living thing, poetry.
Yeah.
All written languages, because it will always have with it a dual layering. Maybe more than two but a layering of meaning depending. Because I've read things that when I read it when I was younger had one implication for me. Then I've read it again in older years and I just went, what?
Yeah.
No, that's, it opened up my mind in a new way.
Yeah.
So it's living. I guess it gets into that.
It evolves with us.
I guess, does the text itself carry the meaning, or do we bring the meaning to the text?
I'm in the latter. I believe we bring the meaning to the text.
A little of both, maybe.
Yeah.
Because it has to be there first to trigger something.
It does, but what it triggers in us is something that's within that there is no way the poet would know that.
Yeah.
But it's anticipated in the writing that this could be... either or.
That's right.
Or. The multitude of things that can come together in this. And I think, you know, if you know someone who's not living their authentic self, wouldn't this be a great gift to say, you know, at some point it's going to be too painful for you.
That's right.
You need to be what you were intended.
Yep.
You know? Because oftentimes I think we have to be so guarded, as I am assuming, based on the little history I know of her, that she's a bit guarded. At that time, would that be okay? Absolutely not. But she has, this is for me, it's less risk than it is authenticity, right?
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That blossom is your authenticity. The bud is what you are.
Yeah. But imagine back then talking about authenticity, people wouldn't have a clue what you're talking about. But in today's you know, contemporary thinking, we're thinking, be who you are. It's okay to be who you are.
That's right.
And you don't have to be like everyone else.
Yeah. So deep.
Yeah, so deep.
So profound.
Yes.
But not all short poems have to be.
No.
They can be fun as well. Let's look at one from one of your favorites.
My favorite. So, next to poets, comedians are my favorite people. Yeah. So, if you know that, for me, wit is a thing that lightens everything. Mm. Just, I can't explain to you, but I can sit and just laugh for hours. And it takes away all the pressures of having to be right about everything. Mm. So Ogden Nash, I grew up with Ogden Nash as a very, very, very special person to me. It's, I would look at his poems whenever I just wanted to just like take the shroud off,
yeah.
You know? So a word to husbands.
Here we go.
To keep your marriage brimming with love in the loving cup. Whenever you're wrong, admit it. Whenever you're right, shut up.
Oh, that's classic. Oh.
And what is so funny about this to me is that he's saying shut up to the guy, not the woman.
That's right.
But I get it.
This is a word to husbands.
It's husbands. It's not.
Don't. When you're right, just go,
Do you want to stay married or not? But like I don't know how much like how aware we are of who he is. Again, an American poet, born in 1902 from New York, but he's known for his light verses. Mm. And if you look at Ogden's work, another thing that I think many of us know, but I don't know that we will attribute it to Ogden Nash, is, you know, candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You
doing,
know what?
Doing the bottle shops a lot of
good. I think we need to do a deep dive.
We do.
Next episode, let's do a deep dive on Ogden.
I think so. And I think that it's what he brings to the table that is so different than a lot of people is his ability to carry the wit throughout.
Yeah.
Like short or long, it's just witty. So there's not much to say about Ogden besides we all can identify with what he's saying, and he just is very clever with his wit.
Take him on the classic, the classic jokes.
It is about
marriage and finding a nice, interesting way to put that into a poem.
And I think he's the dinner table conversationalist, where the things that you say to family and friends every day, and you know, it's just, it's wisdom. It's wisdom. So
it is. Oh, I like that. And if you look at it, I mean, yes, it's short, but it still has quite a few poetic devices in there. You have the anaphora with whenever you're.
Yeah.
And you have love and loving in the one line, which is a polypteton.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even in these short poems, we could go through and I could show you the poetic devices that are being used.
The technical thing about it.
Exactly. The technical thing that gives it a little bit more of that oomph and can do more in those short lines.
Yeah.
The shortness of the poem itself than even some longer ones that might not have these.
And for non-writers, for non-poets, they would not truly appreciate how difficult this is.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Some things can happen naturally.
Yeah.
And you know, you're just like, oh, I like that. I'm gonna start that sentence again. And then you don't realize, I've used anaphora because I'm starting the sentence the same way. But sometimes you go back and you actually craft it. To have those moments that really resonate an idea.
And that's so, when I sit down to write, I will have the devices I plan on using.
Oh, nice.
I do. Yeah. I do. So I would love to say it just flows freely, but it doesn't. I have the devices I have to do. I'll write a draft, and then I'll start ensuring that the devices are working within.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. I don't have the devices, but I have connotations of words, and I have colors and images. It's almost like I create like a palette.
Okay.
Like a painter has a palette, but I have a palette of words.
Okay.
And I've got my idea, and then each line brings me to how I want to weave those ideas into it. And then sometimes those devices make sense. I'm like, ooh, I've done that. Oh, I'll do that again, and that will...
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's interesting.
Yeah. So I really get into the form and look at to become a technician as a poet is that to ensure, because when I always think about when someone reads this and they're going to examine my work, what That's are they going job. To say?
Yeah.
What are they going to say? Well,
I think I can easily get lost.
Yeah.
And my focus can go awry, yeah. which is, I think, why I focus on the
words.
Okay, what am I trying to explore?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then
what's a picture?
Yeah, what's my picture? Yeah. So it's interesting. We're all different. Yeah. We're all different that way.
That's good. Well, I hope you have enjoyed this as much as I have
so
enjoyed
much.
This.
So much.
I have enjoyed this.
This yeah. is it's one of my favorite times that we get to have together, and I love looking at poems. I had more for us this week, but we're going to save them.
Yes.
For another time.
Yes. Yes. So we're invited back to the party, I'm assuming.
Yes. Let's do this again. And I hope everybody joins us again, too.
Yeah.
We really appreciate you listening. Thank you so much.
And gift a few of these words to people you love.
That's right.
I think that poetry is to be shared. Mm. It's to be explored. It's to be experienced. And certainly, you know, breathe it in.
And exhale
oxygenate
it out.
Yourself and then exhale whatever's left.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. All right, everyone. Well, thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks again, everyone.